display and poor sportsmanship.
Can you believe it, Dennis?
I certainly can't believe it. I thought they'd have a little more pride in to play the game.
In 72 in Moscow, we stayed and we took it all. And in 74, and now the Philadelphia Flyers room around a little bit and they're going home.
Ah, that classic Bob Cole clip once again as we played it for Pete Mihalich and Bobby Clark on Thursday before the 72 Summit Series get-together, narrated, by the way, hosted by Pierre Hood, who did an amazing job conducting interviews with nine different people at the same time. At Placid Azar was out there with Knuckles, had a great time. But, of course, that was 72. 4 years later, they did the Canada Cup in 76. They also had the Soviet Red Army touring team. The only team to beat them was the Flyers. They thugged their way to a win, some believe. World Cup fever, catch it maybe in a couple of weeks. Here he is, normally with us every Monday after 6. Michael Farber, welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing great. That clip was from January 11th, 1976. And Ed Van Imp had riled them up. And that's why they ended up leaving. And Ed Snyder was the one who turned it around. He went down to the dressing room of the Soviet team and said, if you don't come back, you don't get paid. And I think it was $200,000. And so they proved what great capitalists they were by coming back to play.
I understand you and I were in the same area code very briefly this summer.
Which one was
I
that?
Was in North Truro, Cape Cod.
Ah, okay, yeah. Yeah, I actually take a boat to get away from people like you and go to one of the islands off the coast of Cape Cod.
Yeah, one of the islands. There's two of them. I won't name which one, but they're very Tony.
Yes.
So that'll give you some idea where Michael Farber is in relation to Melnick here. how would you describe your level of interest in the upcoming World Cup, if there even is a level at this point?
I will tell you this, that it's better having real hockey and good hockey in September than none at all.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what else you're going to hear from me, and I'm going to spend the rest of our time essentially complaining, because I haven't had a chance to complain to you all summer. Some of the great moments in hockey have occurred in this tournament, going back to 87, the 6-5, 6-5, 6-5. The U.S. beating Canada in 96 at the newly opened Molson Center, I think it was called.
That's right.
At that point, the best answer I've ever gotten to a question came at a Canada Cup in 84 in Montreal. The Swedish coach, a guy named Parmstrom, nicknamed the Duck, Anke, the Swedish word for duck. I asked him what was wrong with his team. He said, too many Swedes.
Why was he called the Duck?
I don't know, fat lip or something? I don't know, but that was his nickname. But you know,
good quote.
Coach of Team Sweden. The problem was he had too many Swedes. I love that answer. But there have been great moments. 91 Canada Cup training camp. I'm in Maple Leaf Gardens. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, some late August morning, and Eric Lindros on the first shift. Puck goes back to McInnes. Lindros hits him, and McInnes goes down like those Halloween skeletons, you know, the cardboard that kind of go in pieces, and that's
right.
What he did to Al McInnes, and everybody woke up at that point. I mean, there have been some terrific moments. So you want to see the games, and so whatever happens, the fact that we will see live hockey trumps all the craziness about this.
He's played against some very good players at the world junior level, college level, certainly at the world championships, but never as concentrated per country as it is right now. So it is baptism by fire. But I think just being around him for 2 days, he's very capable of handling that.
Todd McClellan on Austin Matthews. We're with Michael Farber discussing the upcoming World Cup on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. And, of course, the difference in this World Cup, there are two teams that aren't nations. One is a continent, and one is young kids.
You know those sweaters. I mean, I grew up my whole life wanting to wear that NA sweater.
But not available.
That's just so ridiculous. But what about the Canadian sweater? Does that Is that a maple leaf? Looks like a duck's webbed foot.
We're on to the duck theme today.
It's terrible. I mean, you know, whoever designed these uniforms and who came up with the commercials for this tournament, once and for all, who owns hockey? Once and for all. You mean we're not going to have any more of these tournaments? We're not going to have the Olympics? Once and for all. What is this, a referendum? It's obviously not once and for all. When who owns hockey? We know who owns hockey. It's the NHL and the NHLPA. That's why we're having this tournament. They own this tournament. And that's why a lot of people are calling it a cash grab. So you're trying to sell the tournament as who owns hockey, and yet we have Slovenia breaking bread with Switzerland on the same team. We have North Americans commingled, young fellers, and they should be the team that fascinates most of us because we will get to see Connor McDavid and we'll get to see Austin Matthews, and you'd much rather see Austin Matthews in this setting than in some dumb exhibition games for the Leafs. So that's one of the reasons that I'll say, yeah, bring on this World Cup.
I love the tagline, Michael, at the end of that commercial that you're talking about, because they say, I believe it's Sidney Crosby, he says, Canada didn't invent hockey. Hockey invented Canada.
Well, you know, I'm an American. And so maybe I have some of my history wrong, but I think Canada started in 1867. And the first indoor hockey game, anyway, was in 1875 in Montreal. So it's tough
hockey
to say.
Wait a minute. I'm hearing this for the first time.
Yeah, it doesn't make
hockey
sense.
Hockey invented Canada?
Well, okay.
Maybe it defines Canada or helps define. The hockey invented Canada? Well, that's the actual tagline?
That's what the tagline says, yeah.
Yeah, but let's look at that in a little more depth. And I sort of get it. And here's why I get it. Because if this country holds up a mirror and looks at hockey in a certain way, it sees its best self in the game. A Nordic country, obviously. It's a game with heroic acts, selfless acts. It's a game of tough people. It's a game of relatively uncomplaining people. I mean, there are a lot of virtues in the sport at the highest level that Canadians want to see in themselves and project that onto the sport, and the sport projects it right back. Canadians bask in the reflected glow of the game. So if we want to take that a little further and take poetic license, hockey did invent Canada to a certain degree. Now, in the interest of commerce, I object to that tagline, but I kind of get it.
I thought Leonard Cohen defined Canada or invented Canada. Okay, I want to get to the Carey Price quote. I don't know if you've seen it.
Okay.
In Elliot Friedman's piece, re-examining the what was it, 17 minutes, 23 minutes, we were on the air on June 29th when Taylor Hall got dealt and then Weber, Subban, and Stamkos re-signed.
Yep.
From Carey Price, I had an idea the trade was possible. The way our game is structured and the way PK plays, we're headed in a different direction. PK's an offensive defenseman and a risk-taker. That's made him successful. That's the way he plays the game. He doesn't want to change that, and I respect that. I respect the way he plays the game, his type of enthusiasm, his ability to race fans out of their seats. That's a special gift and something that not very many players are able to do. But the way we're coached on our team, the way our team is structured, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for a steady type of defenseman that makes quick plays and is able to move the puck right away. Shea fits that bill perfectly.
What we're saying is the Canadians didn't like PK Subban. They didn't like the way he played the game. They didn't like his flamboyance. I think it goes deeper than this, Mitch. I think if you boiled it down, I think there was a fear that the PK was trumping the CH, that the brand was getting bigger than the brand of the hockey club. And we can go back to the Montreal Children's Hospital now in the new place, and the Canadians being blindsided by Subban in, I guess, in late August, early September, just around training camp a year ago, and his foundation's donation that caught them unawares. And I think that bothered some people beyond Bergevin and Therrien. This was now a corporate deal. So now you have a coach who doesn't like how he's playing in the game in Colorado and the move that Subban tries to make, and then punishes the entire team by not putting Subban back out there when the Canadians are down and needing a point desperately in the standings. Who's going to get you a goal in the final 2 minutes when you pull your goalie? It's going to be Subban. Mm-hmm. He's going to give you a better chance to win. So, in fact, at that moment, Michel Therrien was punishing everybody, and I thought that was one of the worst moves he made all season, other than the fact that he labeled Subban a selfish player, essentially, for what he did. So, clearly, with the July 1st deadline, the no-trade clause kicking in at that point, the Canadians figured if we don't make this move now, he is going to swamp us. His personality is going to swamp us, and everything, this town and this team is going to belong to Subban. And they said, we can't let that happen, and that's why a trade was made.
So presumably, then, this team should be less individualistic. This team should be more unified. This team should be all rowing in the right direction. How's that going to manifest itself if it's the case?
Well, Rod, do me a favor. When you go to the games, bring a stopwatch and time Radulov's shifts. Because they couldn't get him off the ice in Russia. Now, he's a terrific player. In the 2014 Olympics, he was the best Russian forward, way better than Ovechkin, way better than Malkin. I mean, he's gifted, but he is a pain. And it didn't work well the last time he came back for the Nashville Predators, missing a curfew in Arizona. That didn't help his team. It's a bigger gamble in terms of money than, say, a year on Semin for $1 million. This is $6 million+. I'm confused. You know, we're talking about character. Boy, Radulov has never shown it to me. And don't tell me, oh, he's older now, he's a parent, he's matured. Guys don't really change. You know that. And, you know, I expect the same Radulov.
Oh, my God, I was going to fix it. I don't know that. Come on, having kids didn't change you?
Did it change you? Not really.
It makes you totally, totally selfless, as opposed to being totally selfish and self-centered.
Well, he had a kid last year when he was playing in the KHL, and we spoke to your correspondent in Moscow.
Yes.
Who saw him play a bunch of times, and she said she had no time for him watching him play. Couldn't get him off the ice. Long shift, same problem with Kovalev over there, here, and Kovalchuk over there. So, you know, tell me about character. Bring in Andrew Shaw. We got character. We know the kind of thing that he said that got him suspended for a game during the playoffs. So I think there's a real mixed message there, and none of this will matter if the Canadians start the way they started last year.
Our Moscow correspondent, for those who might not be aware, is Gabrielle Farber. There's another name in there.
Yeah.
Give me the other name.
Gabrielle Tetreault-Farber.
Yes. So how was the Tetreault-Farber? Was it golfing or swimming with the sharks?
No. We don't swim with the sharks. We golf a little bit.
Yeah.
Very genteel.
I'm the dumb one who likes to swim with the sharks. Welcome back. You're in mid-season four, Michael.
Yeah, you got me riled up. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Put the game clock at 4:20.